are listening to Teacher Talk It, supporting teachers, parents and students worldwide. www.teachertalkit.co.uk. Like, subscribe and follow to stay in the know.
So one of the things that attracted me to working for OUP, if I'm really honest, was their charitable mission. They put a lot of money back into development of resources or content or support for teachers that is free at the point of delivery.
We help teachers thrive and survive with classroom ideas, cutting-edge school resources, and research-informed teacher training materials. You will also hear discussions on the policy, guidance, and research-based publications.
This week, listen to Ross McGill, founder of Teacher Toolkit, interview Louise Pennington, former teacher and the current professional development lead for primary and secondary at Oxford University Press. In today's podcast, some of the things we'll be discussing are what Numicon is and how Louise came to be a Numicon trainer, Louise's favourite aspects of working in schools across the country, and Oxford University Press's charitable mission and how it benefits teachers.
Hello everyone, this is Ross at Teacher Talk, the most influential blog on education in the UK. Today I am interviewing Louise Pennington. Louise is professional development lead at Oxford University Press. Louise, good afternoon.
Hi.
Thank you for joining me. Could I just get you to introduce yourself to our listeners and tell everybody what you do?
I'll try and be as succinct as possible because my job is quite a mouthful. So, hi, I'm Louise Pennington, the Professional Development Lead for Primary and Secondary at OUP, Oxford University Press. And I'm involved with everything from Numicon, a primary maths resource, through to secondary science, everything to do with referring to research, good practice, and that we kind of use that to put into planning and delivery of professional development.
Now, for people that don't know, what is Numicon?
So Numicon is the reason why I work for OUP. It's a primary maths resource which utilises quite a strong pedagogy based on Bruner's CPA, so the concrete pictorial abstract approach, but actually uses some really tactile manipulatives so that make children, you know, explore and unpick mathematical concepts. So it's a really great resource, and I found that in primary teaching myself. Used it in my own classroom, and then within 18 months we had it across school. So it's that teacher research in action.
It's interesting. My first experience of Numicon was when my son brought it home, coincidentally, and there he was, you know, having a bit of fun, but also hopefully learning maths. And actually, he is developing that classic. He's great at maths, but his love for it is a bit kind of hit and miss. And that's perhaps where that kind of stereotype of I'm not good at maths evolves. You've got a passion for CPD as well, haven't you? How has that evolved?
I think it's probably evolved from my own experiences and chances and opportunities that I was afforded as a younger teacher. So I've continued to develop myself professionally. So I've continued to study beyond my degree. But I was also, you know, led in my second teaching job. I was a SENCO and senior leader. So I led professional development in school there. But I also was a lead maths teacher for local authority. And so worked with and supported and collaborated with other teachers in other schools. And that's kind of where it all started. Mm-hmm.
And before the pandemic, you're obviously around the country.
Yeah, and abroad. I missed a trip to New Zealand actually last Easter, which I'm still working with teachers and going into schools. So hopefully I'll be able to get myself back there at some point.
Yeah. Okay, so we'll come back to the Numicon and CPD. A question I always ask people I work with is, describe your 16-year-old self. What were you like at school?
I was good at school. I wasn't a problem child. I had that perfect mix of social and study. So I think I balanced the two quite well. And I, if I'm honest, did just enough work to make sure I got what I needed, which I think is a skill. But I've continued to, you know, I do see the social side of education quite a lot. And that's why I enjoy continuing my own learning, I think.
And what happened after school?
A-levels in the same school. So I studied at a selective comprehensive school in Oldham. The selection part was church related. And that was in Manchester, in Oldham, Manchester. I stayed on to do my A-levels, which was a really eclectic mix of subjects, actually. I did some humanities, some science, and English language.
Right.
And then from there, I obviously went to university.
And what did you study at university?
I did a primary Bachelor of Education with honours, and my major was Environmental Studies, and my second subject was Foundation Maths. So I was a bit worried, honest, about teaching mathematics to that primary age range because of my own experiences at school, I think.
So my heart warms when people go into degree that teacher training degree. You know, I know it's a few years back, whereas you get your kind of teach first methods now. But that's very reassuring. So what happened next? Where was your first placement? Where did you start teaching?
Oh, the brilliant! We had some brilliant placements actually. We had a special school placement, and that sparked my interest in additional and sometimes more complex needs, which I came back to, and that was what I studied for my master's degree. My first placement, really, was in the middle of Toxteth. I don't know if you know anything about
it. I don't know Toxteth.
So that's in Liverpool, and it was just not...
Oh, yes, of course it is.
Too long after that, they'd had some quite famous riots there. Mm-hmm. And that school, Ross, was my first step into a professional role, as in not being at school myself. The children had a breakfast club, and it was, quite some time ago. The staff were really focused on the community. They had shoes lined up. Some of the children came in without shoes on. It was quite a tough school, but very, very well led. And that opened my eyes a lot, I think. And I thought, if I could teach here and manage my first placement, I think I'll be well placed.
And you've always taught in the northwest of England?
Yes, around Manchester area, Rochdale, Manchester, and into Oldham, yes.
Okay, so really, really interesting. So how did you get in? You mentioned the CPD, your lead maths type role. How has that evolved to a point where you're now with a Oxford University Press?
So that's back to Numicon. So I obviously had a love of Numicon, found it worked in school, and then I was really wanting to be trained as a trainer so I could train other people. And eventually my role moved me into working for the Special Needs Service. And I was able then to access their professional development. So I was trained in how to train others for Numicon. And that's where it started, really. So I was working in my local authority. I was able to train schools in my authority. So for me, at that point, I was a specialist teacher looking at maths difficulties. And so I would often, design a programme of intervention or recommend schools would use Numicon and other things to support the children with their sticking points. And then I joined the consultancy team because OUP has a team of consultants.
And what year was this, roughly?
Now you're talking, Ross. Probably 2012-ish, okay. I think. And then I was working more and more for them. Then I started to go all over the place and deliver training. And then this role, my previous role was the Numicon Professional Development Leader. So I applied for that. I thought that was right up my street, and then I joined the team.
So before the pandemic, what was a kind of a normal week or month look like for you?
I guess similar to yours, there isn't one. So I'd often be in Oxford 1 or 2 days a week. So that's, for me, that's a 400-mile commute round trip.
Crikey,
okay. Sometimes take 8 or 9 hours, depending on the M1. So I'd often stay over one night in Oxford. I would be in schools the rest of the time or working at home. So there wasn't a typical rhythm. But I really like that, actually, apart from managing childcare.
Yeah, I bet. But that kind of joy of visiting lots of schools.
Yeah, you can't put a price on that, can you? I think to see how schools work, to work with teachers, to discuss things and to work with them over time, particularly that sustained professional development, which, is the gold standard, really. But to be in and out of different schools, to be on learning walks, to work with SLTs, to talk to teachers and kind of, to continue to work with them, I think it's such a crucial part of your own development.
What's your favourite part of working with schools, different schools?
Variety, I think. I've been working in so many different settings and picked up so many hints and tips myself and different styles and ways of doing things. So I think that variety, definitely, the fact that I've built a really broad network and connections with other people and to see how different schools run, because, they're very individual, aren't they? They run so differently.
They definitely are. And if I just pop back to Numicon, my knowledge is very limited. Is it expensive? How do you implement it into your curriculum? How do you teach it day to day?
That's a great question. I think It's relatively inexpensive. I suppose it depends how much you buy. Some schools, you know, buy just the shapes, the plastic shapes. Some schools will buy, you know, the other things, because our kits have so many other things in, so it has Cuisinaire rods and things like that. And some schools will buy the teaching resources as well. And so it either can really easily integrate with any kind of resource that schools use or program that they use, or they can use Numicon as their program to deliver mathematics. Mm-hmm. So it's really flexible, which I think is a real positive. And also through curriculum changes, the Numicon pedagogy doesn't change. Some things get moved around in different year groups, and that kind of continuity is really carefully looked at. But it's quite solid in terms of the research and pedagogy behind it. So I think for me that shows it stands the test of time.
I've got a couple other questions. So could you tell listeners a little bit more about the research on Numicon, and also can you use it in other subjects? I guess we know that maths is everywhere, but how have you seen schools use it in other aspects of school life?
That's a really great question. I think it, particularly in the early years, it permeates quite a lot of other areas of development, and particularly when you're trying to use maths across the curriculum. And I think that's quite key. I think Oxford University use it as well, I believe, in the engineering department and maths department.
Okay.
Don't ask me, Ross, what they do, because that's well above my own capabilities. So, you know, it is used in secondary schools as well, particularly special needs and maths, as you've said. And it basically, it just makes those concepts visible. You will have seen, if your son's brought things home, how it's, you know, if he's brought the shapes home, it looks like plastic shapes. But when you put them in the sequence, in the order, you can see the number system, it becomes visible, and it, you know, it comes alive, and then those little shapes are weighted, so a two and a two and a three, where the same as the five. So that's quite useful thinking about algebra later on.
It is useful,
so I think it's got a variety of uses, obviously predominantly in mathematics, but engineering, definitely in the university, I've been told.
And about the research, what's the research?
So it did start as a research project, actually, in Brighton and Hove. It was quite a longitudinal-ish study with some teacher researchers and and a, you know, professor of mathematics. And I think that Numicon was born out of that research, and actually it is homegrown. It's from the UK. You know, it was used across Brighton and Hove extensively in the 80s and 90s. And so the write-up and the publication of that was what led to the Numicon shapes being made.
So have you got any, is there any stats on how many schools use Numicon?
We have our own metrics, I guess, and it shows that probably 80-odd% of schools have Numicon resources in school. If we are honest, they don't all use it to its full potential. And even just yesterday, I was on a phone call with a school who said they have loads of Numicon, but it's in the cupboards. And so they wanted they wanted some inspiration as to how to get it out and start using it. So
give me two or three tips. What are the two or three tips to get it out of the cupboard? What would you recommend?
Yes. So depending on where you're teaching. So for early years, basically tip it in your sand and water. Start there.
Right.
For key stage one, definitely around number concepts and number bonds, which is really key. You know, schools can use that quite easily. But also around those numbers to 20, their structure and how they're built. And then for key stage two, I think people get quite surprised at how well it's used for fractions, decimals and percentages. So I think...
Interesting.
Yeah.
Now, I want to switch to workload, which is a top passion of mine.
Yes.
And I'll move away from Numicon slowly, but can Numicon save people a bit of workload headache? Is there, you know, what kind of resources come with the pack? What does the Oxford University Press provide in terms of CPD to reduce that burden?
Yes, is the answer. I think for us, when we start to look at products, either, you know, revisions of products or development of products, teacher workload and ease of use is obviously central to what publishers do. And so I think for us, what we've tried to do is we've tried to put everything in one place. So we've made, in the last, other pandemic, we've made all the teaching resources digital. And so schools who have the subscription for Numicon, they've got all the teaching resources there. They've got the lesson planning. It's all done. There's long, medium and short term plans there, curriculum coverage. We've also linked it to some of the key things that schools use. So other products or programs that schools often use, we have linked Numicon to that for them, so they don't have to do any matching or searching around for what type of activity you can use it for. So we are continually working on that, and it's really important to me, having spent so long in the teaching profession, that it's central to what we believe, that, you know, we have to keep that workload down. It's so crucial to, you know, to avoid burnout of teachers and everything else. So yes, go on, sorry.
I was going to just pick up on that. So in terms of the kind of resources you provide, the things that you see in schools, you know, you've got that kind of, and plus the international work you do, you've got quite a good oversight in terms of the successes and challenges. What would you say are the happier schools? What are they doing? And what would you say would be a fix for the schools that might be struggling?
I think that's a great question. And if we're still talking about workload, and I think the key thing that happy schools do is they continually ask why. Why are we doing this? Why do we need to do this? What's the benefit of it? And I think that sometimes there's a lot is done because it has always been done or because it worked previously in that way. And I think, I mean, even just this week, I've talked to a teacher who's rewriting planning because it isn't on the planning format that the school use. And I was saying, it's all there for you. It's there. It's done. We've done it. So yeah. Isn't there a way you can just annotate it, or can you just like lift it across and drop it in here? So it's like, sometimes it's just like, please, please don't be afraid to ask why, and have that professional conversation around the benefits of some of the processes that schools.
That's an interesting one, because I know a lot of primary schools do the kind of purple and green kind of tickle pen type methodology for marking. And, you know, I'm not a primary teacher, you were. So, you know, does it work? Is there any academic research to support it? Is it a workload issue? What are your views on that particularly?
I always had the wrong pen in my hand at the wrong time, the wrong colour. I'm a big advocate of trying to give whole class feedback and verbal feedback. I think feedback in the moment has so much more impact than after the event, when people haven't quite remembered what it is they were thinking or doing or how they made a mistake. So I think for me, you know, if we can work the room and try to give, you know, timely feedback within the lesson, then I think all that onerous marking doesn't, you know, doesn't give us as much as the input that we you know, spend.
And, you know, in some of those unhappier schools that you visited, what's the kind of reoccurring thing that pops up?
Too many meetings, so before school, during school, after school, consistently early, consistently early meetings and consistently late meetings. Lots of procedures that people haven't questioned in terms of the impact. You know, lots of in-depth planning and reinventing of the wheel, really, I think.
Things.
And then also sometimes that the way that teachers feel that they're continually being watched and judged, and that kind of lack of professional trust. And I think sometimes that comes when schools are on a journey of rapid improvement. But actually, I think that sometimes to lose professional trust means that you get less out of people and they get more stressed, don't they?
Yeah, no, I've slowly, you know, in my own kind of studies and my interests, you know, really unpicking culture and autonomy. And I think from traveling to schools, you really do start to see it. To articulate it's the harder part, I suppose. Now, Oxford University Press, apart from publishing materials, what else does it offer teachers?
Another great question. So one of the things that that attracted me to working for OUP, if I'm really honest, was their charitable mission. They put a lot of money back into development of resources or content or support for teachers that is free at the point of delivery. So I think that, to me, is crucially important. They are not just on that treadmill of churn for financial gain. They spend a lot of time and effort looking at teacher stresses, teacher workload, well-being, looking at what would help for a particular issue that's arisen. And we do a lot of professional development and have a lot of free resources. We work so hard in the pandemic, pushing out for parents as well, pushing out resources, linking to BBC, you know, the BBC bite-sized content. We put so much, we put the parent workbook for Numicon. We kind of wrote it really quickly and put it out online for free, downloadable, you know, printable shapes and things to do with Numicon. We tried really hard. I think that part of OUP is really important to me ethically. In terms of, you know, that we're trying to support with a lot of free content. You know, we have webinars, you know, continually that are free to access for educators. And yes, I think that side of the business, I think, is really...
So tons of stuff. I have to ask, how was the pandemic for you, you know, homeschooling and those types of things? How was it?
Horrific. I think for someone who's used to being out and about a lot, being in schools, being abroad, traveling, even just my, you know, my commute just to do that is a full day. I've gone from that to sitting in my kitchen for 15 months now. The office is not open. They have a task force working on, you know, the responses, because obviously OUP is a global company. Our offices in China were hit quite early on with the COVID. And so they've had a global task force, and they've worked really hard and been really good at keeping everybody informed. And they've had really strict and stringent safety measures in place for their staff and also for the customers that we work for. So the result is that we've all been sat at home for 15 months, and it's been difficult, but I think you see then how strong teams are and how innovative and supportive and forward-thinking we are, you know, to kind of stop, regroup and start to change the way we do things so quickly.
So you and I will both know that when you work outside of a kind of school setting, school leadership setting, you learn insights from, you know, the business world, I suppose, in some respects.
Yes.
So kind of, you know, given that you've been involved with OEP for, you know, 10, 12 years, what kind of new things have you learned that you would have benefited from as a teacher or a school leader?
I think that's a really good question. I do say this a lot, actually. One of the things that I have really found challenging but really interesting working with OUP is having the day-to-day working insights of how marketing and sales and publishing works. I mean, you know, to know that as a teacher, to kind of understand that business side, I think, is quite important. And I think a lot of, you know, I do run a business. I run the professional development business for the UK, for OUP, and I think it has helped me develop business skills, which I think, you know, more and more now school leaders need. They do need that. The budget side, the you know, that kind of planning and strategic work. And I think that side of my job has brought my, you know, brought a lot of skills to me in terms of, you know, broadening out what I know and understand and can do.
Really interesting. I've got a couple. Moving away from OEUP and Numicon, you know, to just generally, you know, working through the pandemic, how's your work adapted? You know, I suspect lots of Zoom meetings, you know, those types of things. But give us a kind of general insight into, you know, the challenges of lockdown and homeschooling. But given that your own children might be at school, well, they are. How is your kind of week shaping out? The kind of things that you're juggling, the things that you do. Just give us a little bit insight into how you work.
Yes. Yeah, so, I mean, this week's a brilliant example. We've had meetings through the day on Teams. So we had quite a lot of board meetings, sort of product development meetings. They happen actually really well on Teams, and they are really succinct, and they don't overrun. And actually more people can come and observe. I just think they run, actually we're going to carry on doing those, I think, long term.
The don't overruns are great success.
Really, but then they have a time to, and you can just drop in at certain times and listen to a particular part that's interesting to you or part of what you're working on. Then you can drop out. You don't have to like get up and leave the room. You just leave. So there's some really good positives. I think it allows us, for me personally, not to have that 8-hour to 9-hour round trip if I'm needed in the office for something. That's meant that my working day is much more productive for not travelling around. And I think for professional development, we had, when that lockdown first hit, all of our professional development was face-to-face in schools or in a venue. And we had to really quickly regroup and think. And myself and my consultancy team have worked incredibly hard on improving our tech and different systems of working. So some of them have made their own things at home that they can demonstrate things with. They've invested in, you know, Hue cameras and things like that.
It's going to, you know, post-pandemic, you know, my son keeps reminding me that the Black Death lasted 7 years. but how do you think it's going to change your work and OUP, you know, office-based, physical CPD, or a bit of a blended approach?
Yeah, I think.
Where do you think it's going?
I think for us, we have learnt a lot, and actually what we've learnt is that some things work really well digitally, in that blended approach. We are definitely not going to stop doing digital professional development. Mm-hmm. It's a lot of people have said to us it's been much more accessible to them. Mm-hmm. You know, they're not having to leave school or have the long journeys to come somewhere, or it's, you know, it's more accessible than having using a day's inset. So we're going to keep that offer. And we are looking into and developing blended approaches as well. And then, but we are reserving face-to-face for where it adds value and where our customers want that. Because I think, you know, you've mentioned Numicon and I have a lot, but I think for something like that, where it's so hands-on and practical, that sometimes there are things that work exceptionally well when you're in the room with teachers and can work nearly as well digitally with, mm-hmm. you know, with all the technology that's available to us. So I think, yes, we are looking. And in terms of office work, we're in the process now of looking at almost like must, should and could. What must we be in the office for? What should we be mm-hmm. in the office for? But actually, it's not going to fall apart if we don't. And then what could we be in the office for? But actually, we can continue to work at home.
Right, nice.
We're starting to work on that now.
Yeah, I'm just thinking, you know, those types of questions and thinking, you know, the challenges for teachers, we have to be in school. Well, exactly. I say we have to, their parents need to go to work, so they need to send their kids to school. That's mm-hmm. the challenge. So we need teachers in school. But it does throw up lots of questions for the future of education. General websites for OUP or Numicon, where can teachers go to just generally find out more? Where should they start?
Yeah, I mean, we have our Oxford Primary website and everything that is on there. But I think for me as well, there's the Oxford Owl website, which, you know, it's for parents and teachers. And there is a lot, the parents' side is completely free. Mm-hmm. And there's so much information, resources, blogs on there for primary education, for maths, for English, for year group specific things, recipes, activities, you know, things to do at home. It's an absolutely brilliant website. And I think that's something that I would definitely flag up. And the teaching side.
I'm sorry, at the top of your head.
OxfordOwl.com, I think.
Okay. We'll mention that. Now, regular listeners will know we're kind of pushing the 20-minute barrier, so I'm going to start to fire some quick questions to you. No pause, hesitate, that Timmy Mallet type approach. I'll start off easy. What project are you working on today, tomorrow? What's on your desk?
Oh, I'm glad you asked me that, actually. At the moment, I'm working on a really exciting project, which OUP has just launched a teacher consultation paper for. It's called mm-hmm. the Oxford Smart Curriculum mm-hmm. for secondary schools. This project has collaboration at its heart, collaboration between OUP, practicing teachers, subjects and experts, and it really harnesses that collective expertise, and so it's a really exciting thing to be involved in. For me, that's going to be really great. And I think it's got six key pillars at its heart: coherent curriculum pathways, high right. expectation, responsive teaching and learning. So it's really focused in on that creativity, awe and wonder, and I think anything that that does that for me, you know, I can absolutely get behind.
Okay, good. Finish this sentence. If I was education secretary, I would
invest in teacher professional development.
Okay. Piece of advice for thinking about taking the leap into doing something like you in terms of your work.
Mm. Read the research, so things like the Teacher Development Trust, the Cure Research, National College for School Leadership. There's a lot of interesting and quite conflicting research around teacher professional development in particular. Mm-hmm. And then I just think that plan that, you know, I read your blog just last night around that, you know, what works for professional development. So there's lots of little quick things, quick wins there around protecting mm-hmm. time, building a plan, explore, observe, mm-hmm. you know, models and examples, reflect on your practice. So is that plan there? And I think I'd direct them to your little summary of research there as well.
Thank you. What book are you reading?
Oh, I'm quite embarrassed to say, but actually it's a brilliant book. I've been reading, this book has kind of been a bit of a mission. I've been reading it for a long time. So it's called Why We Sleep by Matthew Walker. I don't know if you've read that.
No, I don't know that one.
But it's a book which is it's a blend of kind of science and cognitive stuff and sleep science. But it was recommended to me by a 90-year-old doctor on a train to London. He waved it at me and said, everybody in our generation needs to read it. Mm-hmm. So I think it's everything from behavioural insights, the animal world, scientific research on the brain, advice and warnings about how we should respect our circadian rhythm. So it's a brilliant book, actually.
Okay, that's really interesting. Yeah, because I'm reading a lot on memory at the moment. Now, I know you're a northerner. Are you a chips and gravy girl or a chips and beans or a peas? What goes on top of your chips?
Rag pudding. If you follow me on Twitter,
that's proper northern. Okay. Next question: are you a hunter or a gatherer?
I'm a hunter.
Okay, great. Next thing I would like to ask is, if you weren't doing your dream job, what would you be doing? What's that abstract, crazy thing?
I wanted to be, and lined myself up to be, a forensic scientist.
Oh, okay, interesting.
I dropped languages to focus on science as a GCSE, and then found out that having asthma would stop me from pursuing that to its full extent. So teaching was my second choice.
Okay, interesting. Now, for listeners, Louise has jumped out of a plane. So, Louise, what's your top tip for doing your first skydive?
Don't do it. No, actually, it was brilliant. I think for me, trust that everything will work, and definitely keep your hands folded in front of you, because the urge to kind of cling on as you're pushed out is sometimes overwhelming.
Okay. Were you a better environmental science or a math teacher? What were you better at in the classroom?
At maths, actually, strangely.
Okay. Advice for your 16-year-old self?
Keep going.
Okay, because you mentioned that just enough earlier. What are you most proud of in your career, not in your personal life?
I think my continual personal development, so my continual study, I think throughout the responsibilities that adult life brings you, I've still kept learning and developing, whether it's reading or a formal qualification. So I think I'm most proud of that for myself. And that is a personal and professional achievement, I think.
Okay, great, lovely. If we had 24 hours together in Liverpool, what would you do? Where would we go? What would we see? What would we eat?
Oh, everything. It's such an eclectic city. The docks, the cavern, some of the music scenes and street food. And of course, shopping. And there's some great bars as well, Ross.
We can skip the shopping. We'll just go for some food and some drinks. Okay. Who do you recommend I interview next and why?
Oh, great question. I'd be keen to champion another woman. And I can think of a whole host of brilliant women. But I think for me, Christala Jamil, she's an inspirational executive head teacher working in Tottenham. National.
Yeah, I know Christala.
Do you? Okay, well, there you go.
Yeah, I know. Yeah. So I'll come for Christala. I shall reach out straight away. So where can listeners find out more about you? Blogs or tweets, things like that?
Yeah, so Oxford Primary, as I mentioned, Oxford Secondary, some of the things we talked about. We have Facebook page as well. But Twitter for me, at PD Louise P. Anything to do with gin, food, occasional tweets about education. Mm-hmm.
Now, since I've moved to Yorkshire, Louise, I've got really into nature, and surprisingly, listeners might be surprised to discover I'm really getting into my flowers. So I've got a random question that I'm adding into my podcast. If you were a flower, what variety would you like to be?
I would love to be an agapanthus.
Right, well, I need to go and check out what that is, because I suspect I've seen it. I just need to make the reference to the net. Is that knowledge develop, right, not that picture and the name.
It's the CPA approach, isn't it? Yeah, I love that. I've just planted some more in my garden yesterday, actually.
All right, very nice. Well, I'll check it out, and I might plant some of my own. Final question, what would you hope to be your legacy?
Teaching. I think teaching is my legacy, so to have hopefully contributed to a fairer, more tolerant and inclusive world where everyone is valued equally and has equal opportunity. And if I can instill that in my own children so they continue on that journey of inclusion and that to be the societal norm, I think that would be the best kind of legacy.
Fantastic. So, Louise, thank you. Second time lucky at the beginning, for people listening, I didn't press the record button, but we've got through it. And it's been nice to connect with you properly since I've moved up your way. And I hope we can meet. I'm not going to try and pronounce where you live. You can give me the different versions. But I look forward to meeting you in real life and taking the conversation further. So thanks once again, and keep up the good work.
Thank you so much, Ross. It's been great chatting to you.
Thanks, Louise. Bye now.
Thank you. See you soon. Bye.
Thank you for listening to this podcast. To continue the conversation, head over to www.teachertoolkit.co.uk and our social media channels to access all the links and resources mentioned on today's show. Why not share this with your colleagues and give them the gift of time, reduced workload, and increased impact? Until the next time, before you look after your students, look after yourself.